97.5 The Fanatic.
Oh, good afternoon, everybody. It is the Mike Christinelli Show on a Tuesday where it is hell out there. It was hell, and now it's semi-hell. The wind is still blustery out there, so if you're out there driving, be careful. If you suffer some property damage or you're dealing with that, you have my sympathies and empathy. It raged, and it's still raging. I tried to walk in with... You know, my hair's all blowing all over the place. The wind is crazy.
It's a hat day for me.
Is it a hat day for you? Yeah, I tried no hat, and I got blown all over the place. But there was a storm last night, too. The Sixers. Sixers and the Phillies. We'll talk about both of them. I'm trying to hang in here. And I'm going down a fool's road, thinking that things are going to be different. And I'm trying to grapple with that before I tune out of this season. Now, I'm talking, they won, by the way. And Shake Milton kind of redeemed himself by making a three-point shot that I didn't even think he was going to take, but he fires and he makes it and they win. And that's all good. But this Sixer team is not right. And it's not right on many levels. And it's certainly not right with the head coach. And I hate to say that because I like the guy, but there is nothing different about this team. There is no pizzazz. There is no different plan. There is no set rotation. There is no belief that these guys who can't play shouldn't be in the game. And he keeps trying to go down these paths where he's playing the likes of Korkmaz and Neto on the floor at the same time, mind you. And Ben Simmons looks lost in this new alignment. Other than that, things are going wonderful. But if you've been watching this NBA, you've been watching a bunch of teams play really hard. The teams that had the Sixers playing hard. That team last night that they played stinks, okay? They've got guys off the street playing on that roster. And those guys were scrapping and clawing and out-energying the Sixers, who a lot of people think had a chance to do something in the playoffs. As of now, there is no chance that they can do anything in the playoffs. And I don't know what's going to have to happen for me to think otherwise, except a miracle. And I don't think any miracles come in the NBA. So you saw, I don't have to describe what you saw last night, do I? I mean, they should have put that team away. They didn't put the team away. They wound up almost losing the game, which would have been a dreadful circumstance. And they limp out of this game with their fan base going, this is off a win and a last second kind of shot that wins the game. Their fan base is gone, nah. There is not, if I can find 10 optimistic people today and all the calls that we have, it will astonish me. 10 people who call this show today go, Mike, you're missing it. I think they're going to do this. I think they're going to do that. I don't know what you're saying, but... It's the same old boss to me. And I should have known. You know, a team that shows you a certain profile, and they showed us all a profile being a sixth seed. And I bought into, well, these guys are on the floor at once. Now, this guy needs to get healthy and they'll be fine. And I kind of bought into it, although I was still leery about it. I came into this thing optimistically thinking that things were going to be different. You see anything different? Tyrone, you see anything different? What were you saying on Sixers Outsiders last night? Were you upset? Were you disappointed?
I was disappointed. I wasn't angry, but I was disappointed. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the rotation. A lot of things are wrong, but I'm trying to think of what could actually change. What's with this rotation, Mike? The rotation, and I think...
He has no idea. He has no idea what his rotation is or can be or who he can count on or who he cannot count on. So at this stage.
And at this point, you can't just guess. You have to know what guys can. At this point, he should know what guys can and cannot do. And for that reason, I'm angry because, okay, we know what Thybulle can and what he can't do. We know what Korkmaz and Neto. Neto shouldn't play, by the way. We know what Burks. At this point, we know what guys can and cannot do. We even know what Shake Milton. Shake Milton can make an open shot. We do know that. Like, he should be able to come up with a rotation based on knowing his personnel. And yet, in the fourth quarter, They're up eight, and you just, again, knowing what he has behind it, knowing Ben Simmons is in foul trouble, you take out both Embiid and Tobias Harris again in a game where you're playing no defense and then wonder why you can't score. You can't score because you don't have anyone in the game because Burks is glued to the bench who can generate a damn score. If I know that and you know that, Mike, and the people know that, how doesn't the head coach know it?
I don't know. I do not know. And you are right. It's all guesswork when throwing guys in rotation. And there's no certainty and there's no belief as a fan that you can look at it and say they're making the right moves. This is a team that was supposed to be defensively oriented, right? They were supposed to stop other teams. That was one of the planks that was supposed to get them far in the playoffs. They have played two inferior teams here that both rung up over 120 points on them. Now, how is that possible? How does that team last night with one true player on the floor? I mean, let's face it. He's a good player. DeMar DeRozan. Has Rudy Gay scored 20? What did he say? I mean, listen, he's a nice little sub, but he's like 40 years old at this point. And he's their only other viable offensive option. And then you get this rookie kid from Kentucky throwing in shots. And it's like, well, how do you not defend these guys? Come on. Help me out a little bit here. I'm just apoplectic about how this has turned out. And you know what's going to happen? Here's the same thing. It's deja vu all over again. Because remember they took the ball out of Ben's hands and it turned into a disaster for Ben. He was totally invisible. And they have Butler had the ball because Ben. And now they can make another change. They now, after two games, it's clear as day, they have to go back to the way it was. The Bennett 4 thing is not working as well as the Bennett 1. And you're going to have to take the warts of Bennett 1 on this team and hope something different. You put a defensive profile in there by starting Thibault. You bring Shake Milton off the bench. Or even, at this point, put Horford back in the freaking lineup and then set your rotation that way because this is not working. This is all this gallows humor, but it's like I'm watching the game in disbelief that this Spurs team is hanging in there in the fourth quarter and scoring points. Their fourth quarter defense is horrendous. That shows you what kind of heart a team has. You stop the other team in the fourth quarter, a good team. That's how you're a good team. A bad team you can't stop in the fourth quarter. What do I have to hope for? You can't stop a bad team in the fourth quarter.
And it looks like they can lose in the first round.
It does.
It looks like they can lose in the first round. And I'm a pretty optimistic guy.
Yep.
It looks like they can lose in the first round.
They're disjointed, man. There's no joinder with this team.
And the coach's usual excuse of Embiid out of shape or Embiid's the problem, he can't even use that right now. That's the worst part. That's even worse. So I don't know a path out of this short of what you mentioned. Give the ball back to Ben and see if that works better.
You got to at this point. You have to. You got to go, I don't have enough time now to see this thing through because we're going to find ourselves buried. So let's try to go back to the way it was and perfect what we had in some form. It's like a hitter who goes to a new stance. You know? You don't have enough time to perfect that low hands. Go back to the way you were comfortable. Try to improve what that was. Yeah. All right. We'll talk about it. And the Phillies last night. I was watching a lot of the Phillies last night. I'm flipping back and forth. It was a tough night to flip back and forth. But I didn't think the Phillies were going to win that game. But they're hanging in there. Arrieta, after kind of a, you know, I gave up a couple opposite field home runs, he's hanging in there. He's giving them an effort. And then after five innings, he's done. Now, by the way, I win the over-under. But he probably should have came out for the sixth.
I thought he had settled down.
He seemed to be fine, and they're overly cautious. You can't be overly cautious with only 57 games. I've criticized Girardi in the past, and last night, for some reason, and I don't know if this was even asked by the reporters, I didn't stick around to see it, he takes Arrieta out, he makes the decision to take him out. In the sixth inning, the Yankees have the first two hitters, first two of the three hitters in the sixth are left-handed hitters. and he brings the right-hander in. He brings Guerra in, which I completely didn't understand. Deolis Guerra, he's brought him in before. I guess he's looking for like a sixth-inning guy that can waste a couple innings. But I didn't understand the mentality of bringing in the righty there. And, of course, the right-hander does hit the home run, or Urshela hits the three-run homer, and that puts the game out of reach. But I would love to know what his thinking is there instead of bringing in the left-hander Morgan, at least for the first three hitters, unless he didn't want Morgan to face Giancarlo Stanton. But, you know, I don't know what he's doing. Listen, I'm totally confused. I'm in a state of confusion, a ball of confusion. That's what the world is today. Hey. So we'll talk about it. 610-632-0975. It's the Mike Mussinelli Show. Sixers, Phillies chat, whatever's on your mind, let's get it out. What are you seeing that maybe I'm not seeing as far as optimism with this Sixer team? Back after this, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
The Mike Mussinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
All right, 6:30. It's time to get down to the Twitter poll numbers. Brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons with Natalie Nat.
Thanks, Mike. Today's poll, over 600 votes on this one. Do you feel better or worse after the Sixers win last night? 23% say better. 77% feel worse.
That's because you can't con this fan base.
No.
Now I got to hear Kyle O'Quinn. Okay.
Kyle O'Quinn, you make me pop your eyeball out of your head for Kyle O'Quinn?
Treat him like he's Charlie M. that's cold.
There's never an end to like when we bring up a character in a movie.
No.
Because the entries keep coming in.
Yes.
So this guy, that villain, the albino type of villain guy, we already identified him from The Firm and from... he was the record shop owner in Seinfeld. There's also two more.
Okay.
He was the headmaster in The Sopranos. He was one of the headmasters.
Yes.
For AJ school.
Yeah.
Right? But he was also in Goodfellas.
Wait, what was he in Goodfellas?
He was in Goodfellas. He was the Jimmy Conway's parole officer.
He was the parole officer?
He came in, you got your pay stubs?
Yeah, when they met up and they were sitting next to each other, they had to go in. That was him.
They had the shoebox of cash.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got your pay stubs? He was the parole officer.
Wow.
Amazing.
Is he still alive?
I think he is.
All right,
let's go. Chris in Florida. Chris, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Chris.
How you doing, Mike, man?
What's up, Chris?
Hey, man, I just want to say I'm highly disappointed in Brett Brown and also Elton Brand. I feel like he's not getting much, not many people are talking about him, because if you think about it, we have Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Why did we not go and get shooters, instead of getting all Horford and resigning to Tobias Harris?
Well, they had a cap situation, right? And they had a shooter in J.J. Redick. But he kind of outpriced himself. So who else did you want him to get? It's not just easy to pick a shooter off a tree, right? You got to make kind of a deal. So I'm curious to know what you would have done.
Honestly, I really don't know what was out there, but I'm sure with the pieces that we had, they could at least trade it for one, if not two, and try to get somebody coming here for free. Because they had a lot of money. Because they paid all over for a lot of money. They paid Tobias a lot.
Yeah, but who are your tradable commodities to get a good shooter? That's the thing. You got to look at it all different angles here. Like, you can't give away slop and get a really good shooter.
Okay, well, what about free agency? Don't you think they could have picked somebody up?
Well, again, free agency is like when you're up against the cap number.
Oh, okay, you know who was there? I'm sorry. You know who was there? Middleton. I remember Middleton was there. What if they paid more than the Bucks did?
Who? Middleton was a max contract player.
Right. So
they couldn't get it. They didn't have that kind of cap space to add Middleton.
Well, I wouldn't have signed Tobias or Aller. I feel like they're not a good fit here. So I think they might have money.
All right, so you would have let Butler and Tobias go and signed Middleton.
Yes, I would have. And another shooter. Maybe Cap Jason.
You couldn't do that because what was the Bucks situation?
You can pay more when it's your own player.
Yeah.
So whatever, even if the Sixers offered the max, the Bucks would have to be willing to do a sign and trade, and there's no way they would do a sign and trade with the Sixers for Middleton because you'd be giving one of your rivals their second best player.
So you couldn't outbid Milwaukee for him.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I just don't think that this is the right.
I hear where you're going. I would, in a perfect world, I want shooters too. But the way they're capped out, you know, the money that they paid to their players now, they didn't have that much flexibility, and they decided they didn't want to hold on to JJ Redick at that price.
All right. Yeah. I mean, going forward, I don't think Derrick Brown's going to be here next year. But I also don't feel confident in our GM, to be honest.
You don't feel confident in who?
And Elton Brand, or GM?
Elton Brand, yeah. Okay.
He's
going to keep his job. He's not getting fired. Elton's going to keep his job. Brett is the guy that will go. And he'll let Elton pick a coach. Has he distinguished himself? No. A lot of things haven't worked out the way he thought they were going to work out. He tried to patch it together by adding a couple guys at the trade deadline. You saw what that is. It's not going to make that much of a difference. Brenton, New Cumberland, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Brenton.
Hey, good afternoon.
What's up, Brent?
Say hi to the three of you, but also my guy Connor, who answers the phone a lot whenever I call him.
Connor's a good man.
He is a good dude.
Yes.
I had to say hi to him. So I hope I didn't break any rules. But anyhow.
No, go ahead.
All right.
Connor doesn't get enough mention on this show.
Yeah, all right.
That's Connor's not true.
There it is. But anyhow, so I wanted to call in, and I've been listening a whole bunch of people kept bringing up Markelle Fultz, and the last caller brought up a whole bunch of stuff and decisions that were made last offseason. So since I'm rewinding my life's 76ers DVR button, we're going back in time here, Mike. What I would really like to undo is give Brett Brown the third and fourth, fifth chance of, with honestly enough talent to win way more games than we have so far.
You're breaking up. So your point is you wouldn't have given Brett Brown the contract. You would have moved on from Brett Brown after they lost to Toronto.
Oh, honestly, yeah. Even though it ended in a way that was heartbreaking with the quadruple bounce, mm-hmm. I think they should have ended it then, because I think Brett Brown's been given enough talent, enough times.
Yeah, well, listen, there are a lot of people that feel that. I think it would have been really difficult for ownership to make that kind of a move. They went safe in that they looked at it and said, man, that shot had to beat us, so he evidently didn't do that bad a job, so we'll chance it and come back with him. It's a hard decision to make, to fire him at that point.
And I do think that they asked around for a pedigreed coach to see if one would be willing to leave their situation. I don't think any coach did. They didn't just want to replace Brett just to replace him. I think they wanted, especially when Jimmy Butler's still in the fold at that point, they're probably figuring, can I get a name coach? Like, would Spoelstra have left? Would Carlisle have left? Would Popovich probably not? But you get what I'm saying? I think the Sixers kicked the tires on name guys, because then Jimmy Butler buys in, and then you do bring him back, and you could have brought him and Tobias back and just paid the luxury tax, but all that came off the table once none of those pedigree guys, because if you brought in a young coach, he might be an upgrade over Brett, but Jimmy was still going to be gone.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy only likes what Jimmy likes. You had to try to thread a needle to get a coach based on last year's situation. That's why it's a little more complicated when you're dealing with psychos. And the NBA has a lot of psychos.
So you you'd have had to have picked a young coach who Jimmy would have bought into, which means he wouldn't have bought into anybody.
Right. So
what would be the difference?
Exactly. Especially if you think, if you're on the fence about Brett, and you're not, if you're still not sure. Maybe now they'd be more sure. But I'm 99% sure they asked around with the pedigree guys, say, hey, anybody want to leave their team and come coach these guys?
I got to admit, we opined on that situation, and I said it was, if I was the owner, I probably wouldn't have cut Brett either.
I agree.
Based on that situation. It's just a tough circumstance. It's just very chancy to make a move coming off of that circumstance. Anything less than that, I may have gone for it. Anything less than a four bouncer buzzer beater, I may have gone for another guy.
Right, on a road game seven, that's a hard way to lose your job.
It is.
Just a brief note, Flyers.
Flyers?
Flyers game
on, got their time.
Yeah, 4 p.m.
4 p.m. Thursday?
On Thursday. Mm-hmm.
So we got two short shows coming up.
So you know what that means? The first ever General Knowledge Friday this week on the Mike Missinelli Show.
We got B West coming up.
We have to.
We might have to postpone General Knowledge for a week.
No.
We can't.
Unless we can do, how about this? How about two-hour General Knowledges?
Ooh.
For Wednesday, Thursday.
We might be able to do that.
A double whammy.
Since we're only on 2 hours to give the most people a shot.
Yeah, we could do that. I think.
I like it a lot.
All right, let's think it over.
Yeah, well, we got some, there's certain sponsorship obligations that we have to fulfill.
Yes.
With that.
Okay.
That's the key.
All right. Let's go to Ron in Harleysville. Ron, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Ron.
Mike, just a couple of things I want to go over, but in response to that caller a couple of calls ago, the Sixers actually looked at six players in the offseason. They looked at J.J. Redick, Kyle Korver, Seth Curry, Wes Matthews, Danny Green, and Deion Waiters. Redick priced himself out of what the Sixers were willing by taking a two-year deal for $23 million.
Mm-hmm.
Korver chose his assistant coach that he had when he was at Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
Curry got a three-year deal that the Sixers weren't giving him $33
million. Right.
Matthews went somewhere to get a longer-term deal. Green wanted to play for the Lakers, and Waiters was sour on the Sixers all along. So, in fact, they did look for shooting help. They preferred Redick, but Redick priced himself up with his love affair with Philly and living in Brooklyn. He goes to New Orleans for 2 years. So I don't know how much Brett had in that.
Right. It's not going to fall off a tree. And that's my point to the guy. It's easy to say, well, they need shooters. Another thing is that, how feasible is it to add a good shooter?
And that's what segues me into my latter point about Brett Brown. It's that this mindset of, well, we just got to go out and get a shooter. Okay, well, who are you getting and how much you're paying for him and what's the long-term implications? But he went after eight guys and those guys priced themselves out. Where this ground, so we got to fire Brett Brown. Well, okay, well, let's just take a look at that, but I'll get to that in a second. Here's the thing with Ben Simmons, my beloved 76ers, I got to tell you, is that if you move him to the power forward, he becomes less than average NBA power forward. He can't finish. He's not that savvy in his low post moves. You've got to move him back to the ball because the one thing that makes him exceptional or unique is a 6'11 guy running down the court with the ball in his hands. He is a lost soul. You guys were right on when you said about his mindset, his persona, everything about this creation of him. He's a lost guy. But at least give him the ball back because at a power forward, he's less than average. I could think of 20.
I totally agree. Everything you said, I agree with, Ron. And I was leery of the change in the first place. But then I said, okay, I'm not the expert. This is the guy who's been studying this situation and reviewing video and talking to people, whatever. He's the coach, so I'll defer. But this is not the right move.
No, Mike, and we talked a lot. I was hard on you and you were hard on me about Simmons. And I'm so disappointed because I want him to be the star. Conversely, it's making me love Embiid more and more. I keep yelling at the TV, get the ball to Embiid, clear it out, because Embiid's embracing what it is to get the basketball, and I'm even liking Harris a little bit more because he can score. He can find
He's been assertive. I like the way he's been playing.
Well, Mike, here's the last one. I take a beating for my family and everyone, is that I don't think another coach comes in and makes Ben Simmons better than he is. I know it's a business decision, but I don't agree with it. They can't bring in someone to to make that roster with Furkan and Horford, your sixth and seventh, any better.
Yeah, but they can't keep it either. And I hear you're maybe the next coach can't make Ben Simmons any better. You can't do same old if you lose early in these playoffs. You got to shake something up. You're going to lose your fan base. You're going to lose your team. You're going to lose he will not have done enough to keep his job. It's really as simple as that. You have to go in a fresh direction if you're ownership to give your fan base a little more hope. You can't, the fan base, if you bring Brett Brown back, if they lose in the second round, or God forbid the first round, you bring him back, you lost your fan base. Because from day one, when you lose, they're going to bitch and moan. 610-632-0975. Maybe no coach makes this guy shoot the basketball, but you got to give it a shot. Mike Missanelli Show, back after this.
The Mike Missanelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Jason Stark. Hello, Jason.
Mike, what's happening, man?
Well, we're talking Sixers, and I'm trying to get people. It seems like the people here right now are tuned out on the Phillies, but I want to bring them back because there's a lot of Philly issues. So,
well, there's issues.
Yes, yep. There are issues. So first of all, I mean, covering this baseball with the COVID situation has to be very challenging for you. And of course, the big thing is whether they're going to be able to finish. So we all take this a day at a time. But you had a really interesting story with Andrew McCutchen and how angry he is about the Marlins and what they've done to the Phillies here. So tell us and tell the audience what basically his point is.
Well, he joined me and Doug Glanville in our Starkville podcast, available everywhere podcasts are sold, if you want to listen to the whole thing, for absolutely no charge. But I asked him at one point if he's angry at the Marlins. I was going to ask him if he was angry about other stuff, but I didn't have to, because he said multiple times how upset he was because his team has done nothing wrong. And he kept saying, we did nothing wrong, but we paid the price. And he's right. They lost the schedule lottery, right? The mm-hmm. Marlins showed up in their park just as this incredible outbreak was engulfing their team. So because of that, they couldn't play for 4 days. Then they had false positive tests on a coach and a clubhouse guy, and that was 3 more days they couldn't play. And, just think about their team. Think about their season. You play 3 games. Not only do you take a week off, mm-hmm. you can't even go to the stadium for 4 days because it's closed. And all of this at a time when they've done everything right. They've been one of the most conscientious teams about following the protocols. They've had no players test positive. The only coach turned out to be false positive. It's an outrage. And Andrew McCutchen, I give him a lot of credit. He's not afraid to say what he thinks. And a couple things, Mike. Derek Jeter did a Zoom session yesterday, and I twice tried to ask him what he would say to the Phillies players who were upset at what his team did to their team. And you'd think that'd be an easy, mm-hmm. We're sorry.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who's had to pay the price for what we did, we apologize. No, he wouldn't say it.
No, he would say it, and he's sticking to the narrative. They went out for milk. And didn't go running around the bars in Atlanta, which the contrary reports had come out earlier. And he says that really it was Major League. He threw it on Major League Baseball's fault, not the Marlins, about that Sunday game.
Well, Right. Well, you know, he for some reason he was fixated on the decision to play that game here on Sunday a week ago, and he like three different times he kept saying that everybody knew, Major League Baseball knew, the Phillies knew, everybody was in the loop. It wasn't just their players that decided to play that game. And look, there's some truth to that. That it, Major League Baseball was aware of the testing results. They have to be. All positive tests are reported not to the team, but to MLB. So they knew, and the Phillies knew. It's still unclear exactly what they knew, but there were definitely conversations between Major League Baseball and the Phillies, and the Marlins, I don't know, it looks like athletic trainer, and the Phillies medical staff. It is a false narrative to a point that the Marlins just decided they're going to play, let's play. Okay?
Right.
But the fact that Derek fixated on that and not the fact that his players violated protocol and caused this incredible outbreak and disruption in the sport that, like, if I had this count right, there are now eight teams that haven't played games because of COVID issues, six of them because of the Marlins. He never took responsibility for that. So that's what really frustrates these Phillies players, and particularly Andrew McCutchen. And but the one other thing that Kutch talked about that I thought was important was, the competitive odds are now stacked against his team because of nothing they did. Play that series, forced not to play for a week, go to Yankee Stadium, face Gerrit Cole, get hurricaned out. Now it's not even going to rain, right?
Yeah.
Now you got seven games in 6 days against the Yankees and Braves. They could be a 3-7 or 2-8 start waiting to happen. And a lot of it has to do with the freaking Marlins.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. Now, listen, I don't think the Phillies are a great team, but it is tough to restart a season and not face pitching, live pitching, and not have your pitchers face live hitters and all that. So they're kind of restarting. So this is probably going to be a rocky week for them. I get that.
Yeah, I think that's the issue. It's interesting. I used to talk to players and coaches and scouts every day. Now I talk to infectious disease experts. Okay, so I talked to one the other day who works in professional sports, and he said the sport should not operate this way, where they shut down two teams or a few teams, but everybody else goes on and plays. He said for health reasons and competitive integrity reasons, everybody should stop if this is what's going on. And I think the Phillies are an example of that. And that's one of the things that Andrew McCutchen said. He said that in terms of competitive balance, the Phillies versus everybody else, it's not even close. But what can they do about it?
And tell me about the performance of this commissioner who came out and kind of like threw down the gauntlet and said, get your house in order or we're going to cancel the season. What effect would that have after some of the missteps that he's made through all this?
Well, I mean, he's not totally wrong that we've seen teams not follow these protocols. Right? You just have to watch the games. So we know that teams, even inside the park, are not following the protocols, and they've got to do better. But, as my friend Ken Rosenthal wrote today, there's been a little too much they have to do better and not enough we all have to do better. Everybody needs to take responsibility for how this has gone so far. I mean, one of my big issues with the protocols from the beginning is it doesn't stipulate what teams have to do, what players have to do. It recommends it. And, Mike, you've been around a lot of players. Are players just going to follow recommendations about sit in your hotel room, never leave? I don't know.
They're not even going to follow hard and fast rules. So, recommendations give them an out, basically.
Yeah, it does. So everybody's got to get their act together because the season's in a precarious place. And look, we need to find out if this is about whether the protocols can't possibly work, because if that's the case, then I don't know how football's going to play.
Yeah.
Whether you can't do this outside a bubble, or whether it's just a couple of teams that went off the rails. I said this to you last week. Cardinals are in that place now. We've got to get these answers to know whether or not it's possible to finish.
Let's talk about the team in general. They're not off to a great offensive start. But let's talk about the manager, first of all, because I have not been enamored by a lot of his pitching decisions. One of them was last night, and one was game one. I know he doesn't have a bullpen. What is he up against right now? He brings Guerra in that situation. Why not extend Arrieta one more inning? And then why Guerra when two lefties out of the first three hitters are coming up?
Yeah, I understand Arrieta because it's been so long since he pitched. You got to be careful. And Joe's so conscious of that. It's just how he's wired. But then when you go to the pen, you know, I feel like, you know, remember when you used to take those surprise quizzes in school, Mike, and took all the multiple choice answers and thought, none of these can possibly be the right answer.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like in their bullpen.
Yeah.
I don't know what the right answers are. I don't know what the right choices are. I mean, when you look at bullpen usage so far, I know it's only four games, but Neris and Adam Morgan have faced a total of three batters in four games. I can't figure that out. And of the 14 appearances by this bullpen, they've had 3 1-2-3 innings. Now, one of them was by Guerra, who, when he closed that opening day, I was 1-2-3 with two punch-outs. That was the Saturday, the middle game of that series.
Yeah.
1-2-3 with two punch-outs. He's the only guy in the bullpen who's had an inning like that. And so, I mean, I guess I understand, let's see what happens, but it's confusing. Joe's really been good at managing his bullpen for 10 years in the big leagues. So is it about him, or is it about who he's managing right now in that pen?
Yeah, no, I get that part of it, but like, I'm trying to like take it one step at a time, right? He's got it's Hicks, Stanton, Ford. And also, okay, yeah. So he's got two lefties. So why not? If you bring Morgan in, you got, all right, so the worst Stan could do is hit a home run off a lefty. That's a solo home run. But there's two lefties that he's probably going to be effective against. Maybe he gets all three of them out, and then you can start the next inning with a righty against Sanchez and Urshela. Like, I don't understand the move he made last night.
Yeah, I don't understand it either exactly. He didn't really specifically address it after the game last night. He just said that Garrett threw the ball so well the first time through, and he felt like he matched up. But until you see this bullpen actually pitch a little bit, it's just hard to know who fits what situation. I think that's the biggest problem.
Yeah. Can we tell what they are, Jason? I mean, listen, I feared whether McCutchen was going to be effective because of the age and the injury. I don't know about Scott Kingery anymore. Hoskins doesn't look like the same player. I mean, can we make or is it too soon?
I don't know how you make a judgment based on the way this season is gone. They did have a good spring, right? I mean, McCutchen didn't play, so he's got to get up to game speed, but Reese would be the guy I would be the most concerned about. The last calendar year, Mike, he's hit 161 with five homers. That's in almost 250 plate appearances. 64 strikeouts, 31 hits. Now, he gets on base. He's been on base 9 times in 19 trips, but his swing path is just a mess. Right, and he used to work counts to get that ball he could crush, and now it just feels like he's working counts just to work counts. You never see him hit the ball the other way. He's so pull conscious now. When he hits a ball hard, doesn't it seem like he pulls it 50 feet foul? This guy was on a path to being a star, and Gabe Kapler and John Maley tried to fix something that wasn't broke. And he cannot find the swing that made him look like he was going to be a major impact middle of the order bat. You got to give everybody time, because it's been a mess.
Yeah,
but he's a big worry.
You said something real interesting there. He's working counts just to where it counts, and that to me is a confidence problem. That is a belief in your head that you can't hit. And so you're trying to avoid the aggressiveness that you usually have because you're uncertain whether you can hit. And that's a terrible thing for a hitter.
Yeah, with his swing path, they're just pitches he can't handle now.
Yeah.
Right? Pull conscious uppercut. No ability to take the ball the other way. Right? Or line a ball through the middle. Charlie Manuel tried to get him to get back to that last year, and it never happened for whatever reason.
All right, Jason, doubleheader tomorrow at the old ballpark, so we'll see what happens. Now, let me just get one last question here. This Spencer Howard situation, are they more than likely now that he'll start a game with the doubleheader situation?
Joe strongly hinted that after the game last night, said they need a starter for Sunday, and why would it not be him? All the service time worries are over. There's no worries now about innings or pitches. It's August. So Nola Wheeler tomorrow, then some version of Eflin Velasquez, then Arrieta comes back Saturday. I think you see Spencer Howard Sunday. That'll be must-see TV.
All right. It is must-see TV. How are you feeling about the Sixers right now, by the way?
seen this movie before.
Uh-huh. I got you. I know you're buried in baseball issues, but I know you're paying attention to this.
Well, that rain delay was very convenient last year.
Jason, always a pleasure, man. We'll talk to you.
You too, Mike.
All right, Jason Starr brought to us by DraftKings.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.